Welcome to A New Lens with Common Good Capital, where we talk with investors, RIAs, fund managers, and philanthropists about their experiences within different impact investing themes, as well as explore the power of stewardship and capital. I'm your host, Jeff Schaefer, CEO of Common Good Capital. I am here today with Russ Janisse, president of Alliance Strategic. Very fun to have you in the office and just to do this face-to-face. So welcome to Orlando.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. So we've known each other now for several years, worked together. Russ has an amazing resume in the real estate business, especially in affordable housing and workforce housing, which I'm sure we'll hear about. Let's go ahead and dig in. Give us a little background of yourself and specifically where you grew up, where you went to school, and then high level of your career.
I grew up in Central California, rural part of the state of California, mostly an agricultural area. Went to school at UCLA in Southern California and met my wife there. We lived in Los Angeles for about 20 years. I also went to law school in Southern California at Pepperdine University and practiced law for about 10 and a half, 11 years in Southern California before I transitioned into equity investing in affordable housing.
So Pepperdine, it's not the prettiest place in the world, is it?
It was tough duty.
Yeah, I have a good buddy of mine that I spent worked for 20 years with, and he went to Pepperdine. And the first time I saw it, I'm like, oh my goodness, to go to school here. That and like in Santa Barbara, I've got some friends, and you're like, this should not be a college location.
No, it makes it challenging. Although I used to tell people the inside of the law library isn't all that attractive.
So, Russ, I know you too well, and so you're very modest. Give us a little more background on some of your accomplishments in the real estate space.
Thank you for that. I appreciate that. I've been fortunate to be with good people for a long period of time and people who have helped my career along and who've made me better, made me sharper, made me a better practitioner. And that's been terrific. So I started in affordable housing, investing in low-income housing tax credits with AIG SunAmerica. And then from there went to a company that was a subsidiary of General Motors and GMAC. And that led me to move from Southern California to a small town in the middle of the country in Ohio, where I've lived for the last almost 20 years with my family. Been a great existence there, and we've done business on a national basis since then. Been fortunate enough to work with several large public organizations investing in real estate. And then about 7 years ago, decided that I would prefer to be on the private side, non-public side, I guess is the better description of that, and have been doing that ever since. Consider myself very fortunate to be amongst a group of peers and colleagues at Alliance Strategic Investments that have had long-term experience in affordable housing and all take great pride in what we do in creating good communities across the country.
So this is a question not to offend my mom, but I'm going to use her as a metaphorical person. If my mom were here, and my mom is in her mid-70s, explain to her or to me, whatever, the difference between affordable housing and workforce housing.
We define it, and I think it's a fairly widely accepted definition. Affordable housing typically has some sort of regulatory agreement or written restriction on the property that limits the rents that may be charged. Workforce housing, in our book, is probably oriented towards renters who earn a little bit more than residents in affordable housing earn, and I can put numbers around that. Workforce housing doesn't always, and maybe not typically, have written restrictions on the rent. It's just more of a naturally affordable or targeted market play. So we typically assume that residents in an affordable housing property are going to be those folks who earn 80% or less of an area median income based on a number of data points. And generally, it's considerably lower than 80% of area median income. Typically, you're going to find folks at 60 or 50 or 40% of area median income. Those would be your residents in affordable housing properties. In a workforce housing property, we're typically looking at someone who's earning 80% or above of area median income. And in cases where you're in a high cost area, you know, traditionally San Francisco or New York or Honolulu or someplace like that, it may be that they're earning more than 100% of area median income and still unable to afford a home.
What's interesting to me, like when I hear your definition, and obviously that's the same thing that we talk about, and then we talk to people, some people will immediately say, oh, well, one of those is more impactful than the other. And it's interesting that safe, clean, affordable housing, I don't kind of care what income level you're at, it's like foundational.
It is. I think you're exactly right. It's a fundamental human need. It is a critical component of a healthy lifestyle. You know, there are countless studies that have conclusively indicate that good, safe, reliable housing, clean housing is essential to well-being, to wellness outcomes, to educational outcomes, to economic outcomes. What we generally say is that the combination of residents who would qualify for affordable housing and those who would be workforce housing residents comprise about 70% of the multifamily renter market. And we consider them to be collectively renters by necessity, folks for whom purchasing a single family home is at least for now, probably out of reach. The need for that housing is critical. It may be that it's more impactful in some ways for folks at the lower end of the earning spectrum, but it is impactful for each one of them mm-hmm. because the alternative is inferior housing or no housing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That was very helpful to understand kind of your business and what you do. And so these next questions are a little more personal. So you can either make them highly personal or you can shy away and make them completely business. How would you best describe yourself in the context of where you're at in your life journey?
I'm incredibly fortunate. I have a wonderful wife and four healthy, happy children. I'm a very proud father, good friends. I get to work every day with a group of people that have integrity and wisdom and a work ethic that is inspiring. And we get to do stuff that makes a difference in communities. We get to, as the saying goes, do well and do good at the same time.
Well, that rolls into the next question I wanted to ask you, and that is, how are you trying to change the world?
One person at a time, one resident at a time, and not just with residents. You know, frankly, I'm fortunate enough that I get to interact across the spectrum of stakeholders in affordable and workforce housing. So certainly residents at our properties. I love nothing more than to walk around a property and engage with people who live there and talk to them about their experience and hear what matters to them and hear what they have to say, whether it's, you know, positive or negative. And we take all of that to heart. I'm also fortunate enough to get to work with professionals who are in the business every day, whether they're property managers or service providers or lenders or others who have a great deal of wisdom to share and to speak with our investors. I'm inspired by the commitment that I see from our investors to not only put their money into something that is meaningful, but their focus is on impact as well as on return. It matters to them. It's important to them that we are able to measure and account for what we do in more than just dollars and cents. I love that about this space.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever shared my story with you of how I transitioned from what I would call traditional finance to impact investing, but it all actually was around affordable housing. A friend of mine here was doing a fund, and you've experienced this firsthand, but I hadn't at this point heard directly from residents on like a 30-second little vignette, and you just realize that the capital that was infused into these buildings, plus the services, and frankly, just the love and the heart of those that run the property, the words that stuck out to me was, you've given me my dignity.
Yeah.
And I'm so excited now to have people come to my home. And when I'm watching this video, this would have been 7 years ago, I'm like, home? You live in an apartment? And you go, no, it's a home. It's their home. So obviously you've lived that and you've experienced it, but it really was a thing that made me go, all right, I really want to align myself with investments and investing that not only make money, but also do good.
No, and I think you and I are very fortunate that we're able to do that and that we've seen that impact and we get to spread the gospel to folks out there about how they can really make a difference.
Well, and it's interesting. One of the theses that I have, I mean, and others have as well, but it's this whole idea of generally, it doesn't have to be this way, but when we invest, the emotions that tend to creep in are a little more on the greed side, a little more on the fear side of, you know, am I going to have enough? I don't want to lose it. And what I've found is that when you actually make an investment intentionally into things that you care about, that grip of fear and greed lessens. And there actually is a joy and freedom, which is kind of weird probably to say about investing. I can tell you the last 5 to 7 years, I've experienced it a different way than I ever have in the previous 25 years of my investing career. So I guess we started talking about capital a little bit in there and investing, but when did you realize the power of capital?
Oh gosh, I'm not sure when that there was one moment, the one aha moment.
Mm-hmm.
It just sort of evolved over time. You know, maybe it was early, It probably was early in my career as a lawyer when I was fortunate enough to be working with some other young lawyers who were volunteering at a homeless shelter. And you see in stark reality or stark contrast what the challenges that, that people face and the difference that, that capital can make, certainly economic capital, human capital can make. And I think it's just sort of built upon that ever since. I'm learning something new every day, and I keep thinking I'm, you know, not at my best yet. I'm hopefully that's still ahead of me as we continue to learn.
Go back. It seems like you're about to tell us a little bit of story, the story about this group of lawyers. So what did you guys do?
We were naive in a lot of ways. We started out volunteering at a homeless shelter in Skid Row in downtown Los Angeles. And, you know, initially thought we'd go in and provide just some general legal advice and work with people. And what we found after just a little bit of time was that in this particular shelter, residents had come in voluntarily. They were looking for housing. They were also looking to try and put some structure back in their lives. In some cases, they were participating in 12-step program or rehabilitative program, you know, going through some job placement services and the like with the to try and transition into some more permanent housing. But many of them had legal challenges that that were overwhelming to them and that we could help with. Many of them had received what are known as bench warrants, which they may have had a ticket for jaywalking or loitering in public or doing something worse, or, you know, could have been, you know, while they were impaired. They hadn't attended to it. They hadn't shown up in court. So it becomes automatically a bench warrant, which means they can be arrested. And here they're going through a program where they're trying to get their lives back together and get jobs. And many of them would need to go apply for a driver's license and they couldn't get them. And so, and they didn't know how to address it. And so we put together a program through the cooperation and support of the bench judges downtown and the prosecutor, where we all identified that it was not in anyone's interest to incarcerate these people after they've taken these positive steps in their lives. It was in everyone's interest to try and help them to lower the hurdles that they faced. And so we went into court with them and tried to clear up their legal issues so that that was one less impediment to them getting some of that structure back, finding employment, finding housing. And that was really sort of the, you know, the very first start, I guess, for me in thinking about housing and what it means to people and how it's fundamental to our lives.
When you think of stewardship, obviously doing what you do, you are a fiduciary and of people's capital and probably in other ways as well. So my question for you is, what does stewardship mean to you?
It's an awesome responsibility. It's something that I think about every day, and as do my colleagues at Alliance Strategic Investments. We know that people have entrusted us with their hard-earned money. And as importantly, we know that they've entrusted us to do something with it that makes a difference. It earns a return that they're seeking. And for most of them, is impactful as well. And so we focus on that every day. We're constantly challenging ourselves and asking how we can be better, how we can make these investments more effective, more sustainable, more impactful. It's what I wake up thinking about every day. It's what I go to sleep thinking about every day.
Do you have any stories or recollection of where you learned what it means to be a steward?
You know, I you're asking me to go way back in my memory now. it's probably, well, it's certainly not the same. But, you know, I can remember when I was in high school, we were encouraged to volunteer in organizations and do certain things. And in some cases, we had opportunities to try and help folks who were less fortunate. And you're creating a relationship there. And it didn't involve money.
Yep.
And so it wasn't a stewardship in that sense. Mm-hmm. But it was, you know, folks are trusting you. They're relying on you. They're counting on you to do your best and you know, do something that makes a difference. And I always found that to be really invigorating.
You know, I'm thinking back to when I was in high school. I mean, we definitely did some volunteer work, but I contrast that to both of my kids, who one's in college and one is graduating Friday from high school.
Congratulations.
Yeah. And they actually had our requirements. Did you have requirements growing up?
We did not, but my kids like yours have had that. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah, I did too. Yeah. I don't know when it switched. Mm-hmm. I just, because we didn't have them.
Yeah.
But it is cool that they do that. All right. So now it's, you got to open your brain a little bit wider here. If you could make one dream come true for your life, what would that be? And I always want to set the record. You don't have to look for the most magical, or you're going to offend somebody. I mean, obviously you want your family to be healthy, but so just dream a little. If you had one or two, what would you say?
Oh gosh. That's a wide open field.
There. Well, it's a wide open field, and you had no clue that question was coming.
I think to be able to share our story is not the only good story out there, right? I mean, there are so many people who do so many important things to help others, and we're very much a for-profit business, but we love that we can do well and do good at the same time. Just to be able to share that story and hope that people find something there that resonates with them, and to be able to share it on a broad basis, because I think that's, you and I have chatted offline about, you know, some of the discord that happens in communities now. And I just think we need to return the focus to what we can do for each other and how we can be useful to each other. The more I can have an opportunity to share that story and hear others who have similar stories, the better.
In the context of working in affordable housing and workforce housing, have you seen any changes from, I don't know, 20 years ago to today, and how people view affordable and workforce housing?
I think it's become, certainly there's greater recognition. It's much more front of mind. Having said that, the need is greater now than it ever was before, and it continues to grow at an exponential rate. One of the additional impacts of COVID-19 is that there are now more people who need affordable housing than there probably were 18 months ago, right, because of the economic impacts. So I think I think more people are aware of it, which is good. Hopefully that leads to folks being creative and thinking of solutions and committing to apply the resources and working in their communities to try and address the problem. It affects every community now. I think probably 20 years ago, it wasn't unusual to think, well, that's not the problem in my community. Mm-hmm. It's somewhere else. And now it's not. It's everywhere. There's not a community in this country that doesn't have a shortage of affordable quality housing, and it impacts all of us.
Yeah, you almost think of, you know, my younger years, you flew somewhere overseas to feel grateful, to help people out. And unfortunately, it sounds like you don't have to fly very far. I mean, we probably need to drive whatever, 20 minutes from us and figure out how to help people right around us, which one could argue actually could have more impact. That's not to say we shouldn't go overseas and help people. But, well, look, I appreciate you coming on and sharing some of your story, being vulnerable, letting us hear some of your passions. I've known you, but it's fun to actually memorialize this, and your kids will have to share this with all of their friends, and their dad will be famous. So thank you for joining us.
I'm grateful to you. Thanks for having me. It's good to be with you.
Don't forget to subscribe to A New Lens with Common Good Capital on your podcast app of choice. And please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. This will help new listeners find the show and hopefully put them on the path to a more fulfilling portfolio within the impact investing space. I'm Jeff Schaefer. We'll talk to you next time. This podcast is a production of Common Good Capital and does not constitute an offer or a solicitation of an offer. Such offer would only be made through a private placement memorandum. Prospective investors in private placement securities should be aware that making an investment is speculative and involves a high degree of risk, including the risk of losing all or a portion of an investment. Investments of this nature are illiquid and subject to substantial restrictions upon transferability.